Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame has become one of the hottest names in Hollywood. Why is that? We'll chat with someone who has a particular interest in the horror movie genre and to find out what makes Jordan Peele so different. And we'll take a sneak peek at some of the movie sequels in the works that will be released over the next few years. That's what's happening on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit research and development company whose goal is to bring a focus of respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate to the workplace. Learn more at srcinc.com/WAER.
Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame has become one of the hottest names in Hollywood. Why is that? We'll chat with someone who has a particular interest in the horror movie genre and to find out what makes Jordan Peele so different. And we'll take a sneak peek at some of the movie sequels in the works that will be released over the next few years. That's what's happening on this episode of Pop Life. Filmmaker, comedian, and actor Jordan Peele is best known for his work in the comedy sketch show Key and Peele on Comedy Central, but lately he is a rising star in the horror genre.
Get out. Sorry, man.
Okay.
Get out!
Yo!
Yeah.
Yo, chill, man.
Chill!
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 Chill,
chill, man!
Chill!
Get the fuck out of here!
The 2017 movie Get Out, which tells the story of a young African-American man who uncovers a disturbing secret when he meets the family of his Caucasian girlfriend, earned Jordan Peele an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay and nods for Best Director and Best Picture. Without allowing the dust to settle on those achievements, Peele wrote and produced and directed the 2019 horror film Us, which is also critically acclaimed. To help me explore Jordan Peele's recent success is Kendall R. Phillips, professor of communication and rhetorical studies at Syracuse University and co-director of the Lender Center for Social Justice, also at Syracuse University. Welcome to the show, Kendall.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So talk to me a little bit about your horror movie bona fides.
Oh, my. Yes. Well, I get scared easily. No. I am a scholar of rhetoric and culture. So really what I'm interested in is what gets reactions out of people. And so a lot of people who study rhetoric look at, say, presidential speeches, which can be quite horrifying sometimes. Some people look at literature or written documents. But I'm interested in film, and particularly I'm interested in the kinds of films that really get a reaction, not just box office, but people really respond to. And in my research, what I found was the type of film that seems to not only get a reaction, but kind of promise to get a reaction is horror. And so that's what I've been studying for the last, say, 20 years.
This is going to be a really interesting conversation. One, for the reason that horror is not my favorite genre. I think like most, well, here's what I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. It tends to be a young person's, even teen kind of thing. So when I was a teen, all the, you know, the Freddy Krueger, Halloween movies, all those things, Friday the 13th, you know, you would, it was an experience to go to the theater to get scared.
Sure.
Now that I've experienced the world a little bit and, you know, some things could seem like they could be a little closer to the truth than
yes.
others. I get my entertainment in other ways, but Jordan Peele's doing things a little differently, and I want to get into some of that, what's making him successful, his storytelling. Interesting that you mentioned what you just did about studying things that get a reaction, because one of the things that Jordan Peele discussed in terms of how he became interested in horror was when he was a teenager, a young boy, who was interested in and inspired by the Friday the 13th movies.
Oh, sure.
And Freddy Krueger. And he felt that you could get much more stronger and more powerful reaction from horror making people shudder in a theater than you could through laughter. So it's very interesting that you bring that up, because that is sort of what he's saying, why he's gotten into the horror genre.
Well, it's a funny thing at some level, and this may sound strange, particularly to a person who says that they don't like horror, but horror and comedy are actually pretty closely related. You know, you think about both types of films kind of hold up a twisted mirror on reality. So they take things that are real, they either twist them through a comic frame or twist them through a kind of tragic, horrifying frame. But they're also, in a weird way, both genres of film designed to create a reaction. So if I go see a drama, I'll say, if I go see a science fiction, I may go, ah. But horror and comedy need me to really react, mm-hmm. either with a burst of laughter or screams or sometimes a little bit of both. So I could sort of see, and I think the last part that I think it really gets to Jordan Peele is, there's a kind of subversive politics that are potential in comedy and horror that are a little bit different than other kinds of fiction. Like, you can really needle society either through a comic hero or through a monster. And they really get to some deep-seated anxieties and fears and concerns in ways, I think, that maybe other genres don't.
And that's, I think, part of his success, because that's what he's doing. So if you take, for instance, Get Out, which was, again, critically acclaimed, and a financial success.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they spent $4.5 million producing it, made $254 million. So very nice net profit there. But he effectively mixes comedy with horror, you know, given his comedic background and his interest in horror, through not only through the storytelling, but through the people that he elects to bring onto the project.
Sure.
So like in Get Out, comedian Lil Rel Howard, who to me in that movie was the movie
great.
Stealer.
He
was the scene stealer. Lots of messages in there about race relations, interracial relationships,
sure.
and both through the storytelling and literally. I mean, I think Howard says, you know, pretty much, told you about dating them white girls.
Yes, those white people are dangerous. Exactly right. So, I've always said that myself. Yeah.
So I think through his storytelling, Jordan Peele is sort of talking about some of the difficulties and horrors of race relations and interracial relations through this movie, which I found the storytelling to be quite effective.
So here to me is the genius of Jordan Peele. And both Get Out, and in some ways, as much, maybe a little bit more so in Us. These are horror movies, like home invasion, doppelgangers, mm-hmm. you know, body snatchers. Like, these are all the classic tropes of horror. But Peele never wants us to get too scared. Like, there's always that little bit of comedy. There's that little moment, even in the midst of harrowing scenes, that kind of don't let us. And I think part of that is, if we're really scared, we kind of disengage our critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're frightened and disturbed but always held a little bit back, it makes us look for the allegory. Like,
yeah.
It makes us look for the kind of deeper meaning, not just the, oh, my God, they're stealing people's bodies.
Right.
But, oh, who is doing it, why they're doing it, how they're doing it. Oh, I get it. This
yeah.
is actually a bigger thing.
I mean, this is not a slasher movie, so there's not a great deal of blood and gore.
No.
It's more psychological than I think any of those other things. But there are things that are happening in this movie, and I did see it, and I really enjoyed it. So I said I'm not a horror movie fan, but I had to go see this movie because so many people were talking about it.
This is one of those films that I find really, really fascinating. It's not just a movie; it's a cultural moment.
Yeah,
and to me, it was a very interesting kind of period of time because you had Get Out, and then Black Panther,
mm-hmm.
both of which had people coming to the movies who say, I don't like horror, or I don't like stupid superhero movies, mm-hmm. but I'm going to see this
right.
because this is a thing. Like,
right.
This is a moment.
Right. And you know, some of the things that got me on the edge of my seat were, you know, the going into a dark place, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
Not being able to control your body functions, talking about transferring someone's consciousness into your body. I mean, these things are I'm a sci-fi fan, so this is
sure.
a little bit of science fiction in it
oh,
as
yeah.
well, which made it really interesting. I do like, and I do think a part of Peele's success is the fact that he is a director, writer, producer of color, and that he is making a point about putting people of color in starring roles, hero roles, like he's done with Us and like he's done with Get Out. You know, so we have an old joke in the black community about black people being in horror films. They're usually the first to go, right? They're the first to die. And so it's, I think for a lot of folks, it's very refreshing that you have brown people in a movie that aren't, you know, being served up right away as plot points. They are actually the main characters and the heroes of the movie. So I think that in itself makes it very refreshing.
And I think this is one of the really interesting things about this cultural moment. As much as there are difficult things about the current cultural moment, you have these great filmmakers, you know, so certainly Jordan Peele shifting the horror genre, Ryan Coogler, so that you don't just have the black sidekick to the superhero, that the entire cast or the vast majority of the cast is African-American or African. Then you have, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, where you don't just have Asian characters as the butt of the joke, but they are the romantic leads of the joke. So you're finding across the board filmmakers getting space and audiences coming to those films to reward the fact that, yeah, we don't have to just keep seeing the white guy get the girl, the white guy save the day. Like, we've seen a lot of white guys do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's time for somebody else. And so it's amazing that those, you know, those films have always been there. And a lot of these filmmakers have been there, you know, so Coogler and Fruitvale Station and other folks. But now you're seeing the studios recognizing it and getting those movies in front of big audiences and those audiences showing up.
And the other thing that I really appreciate about Jordan Peele is he's working with original source material. So he's creating the source material.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be talking about in this episode sequels, which I often accuse Hollywood of being lazy about developing source material by going back to older movies. He is showing true talent in his script writing. And we saw it with Get Out. I have not seen Us, but I hear great things about it.
Oh, it's tremendous.
And so if you're not familiar with it, it's a psychological horror movie in which a family is haunted by doppelgangers, one of the tropes you spoke about, who most of them vocalize crudely. I think one of the doppelgangers can actually speak, but they explain that they are called the Tethered, and that they share a soul with their counterparts, and they've come to untether themselves. This was a financial success as well. $20 million to produce this, grossed $254 million worldwide. But it's great original material.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, horror, now there are a lot of horror sequels, obviously. There are endless Freddy, Nightmare on Elm Street. There's endless Friday the 13th. But horror as a genre has typically been pretty good about creating space for really different thinkers, partly because they're cheap, right? I mean, you can make a horror film that's $20 million. That's on the high end for a lot of horror. A lot of horror is $4 to $5 million. And so if you only make $80 million, hey, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, no one's going to turn their back on that profit margin. So, and I think it's also because audiences, particularly audiences that like horror, want to see something different. Like, we may go see The Endless Friday the 13th to see how Jason kills the next person just for fun. But we want to see what you can do with a possession story or what you can do with a slasher story. We want that twist. And so Jordan Peele's entered that space, brought with him this really potent kind of political critique, mixed that together in a way that has just been masterful.
Now, having praised him for original writing, he is bringing back Candyman.
Exactly.
So it's not a, I don't know if it's a – it's actually, that's not a sequel. So that's a reboot probably.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
One of the things that he's – so they haven't spoken much about this. But one of the things that he is on record as saying, or at least one of his Monkey Paw production partners has said that he intends to do, is that he wants to take on toxic fandom. So lately we've had this thing where fans are just kind of getting out of control.
Yeah.
So you have fans petitioning HBO to remake the final of Game of Thrones,
right? That's right.
You had fans getting out of control with
Star Wars,
harassing folks in Star Wars, and so he is going to what I'm reading is that that's somehow going to be addressed in this movie because you have a lot of folks out there questioning. You know, because it's a cult classic.
Sure.
I think one of the first, outside of a monster movie, one of the first black horror movie villains that I can remember.
Outside of sort of blaxploitation films
right.
of the 70s.
Blackula and things like
right,
that.
Right.
So one of the things that I think folks are concerned about is you know, how is he going to address the historic nature of this movie?
Sure.
It took place in Cabrini-Green, which
Chicago.
Is a famous housing project in Chicago, mm-hmm. which is no longer there.
Nope.
So it's like, so how is he going to address this? And I think he is going to address it by putting up his middle finger at folks.
I look forward to seeing what he does with it. And it's interesting, this will be the first time we've seen him take existing source material, the original sort of short story by Clive Barker that was set in Liverpool, then transposed and turned into more about race than class in, but still a white director, white producer, like vast majority of the behind the scenes folks were white folks.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what he brings to this. And this will be, I think this is a little bit of a test of his directing skill.
Mm-hmm.
Can he take something that people know, they've seen, they're familiar with, and add some new elements to really make it? And it's also like sort of the slasher genre feels like kind of a dead genre at the moment, or
yeah.
dead subgenre.
Right.
So if he can make this work, hats off to him.
What's the new horror? What's the fad now? What is the one that's working?
I think we're still in the haunted house era.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so haunted houses since Paranormal Activity. And, of course, the Blumhouse Productions that has made the Conjuring universe. So now
mm-hmm.
we have – Marvel's not the only one with the universe. The horror folks get it too. But we're still seeing lots of films that are about haunted houses, possessions. We're in a very supernatural phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then sometimes we shift back into more of a what I would call a physical phase.
Okay.
The slasher, the serial killer, in some ways the zombie, because they're very much about physical threats.
Right.
But when the devil comes, it's not really about your body. It's more about your soul.
Right. Yeah. And I think both Us and Get Out are in that paranormal.
They are because, they're not so much soul or supernatural because Peele has this kind of, that's why he brought back Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
He has that sort of love of science fiction. But it is very much about your soul.
Yeah.
And in some ways, not to be too allegorical about it, you wonder if that's not kind of the question for at least America at the moment, is what is our soul? What is the nature of the soul of this nation?
I'm glad you brought up Twilight Zone. So he is hosting Twilight Zone. It's on CBS All Access, so you need to have an All Access account, which I have, and I've watched a few episodes.
Okay.
So what's your take on that? I don't find them to be as edgy as the originals.
No.
They're interesting anthology stories to sort of check out, but I'm not getting any kind of edge with them.
No, it doesn't feel the same level of intensity, I guess, as
right.
his film projects, which may be partly working with CBS. I think there's also a disadvantage in terms of bringing the Twilight Zone back because we now have similar anthology. I mean, Black Mirror is
Black.
The,
I was going to say
the big
Black.
One, right?
That is the thing that I judge it against, and it comes up way short of Black Mirror.
Certainly, the first several seasons.
Yeah.
I haven't always. I mean, it's any anthology series is going to be spotty. That's just the
yeah.
nature of things. But the first few seasons of Black Mirror was just consistently hitting the ball out of the park.
Well, there are three new episodes out now. The first one was really disturbing for me.
Is this the Miley Cyrus?
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, it's not disturbing in that.
Miley Cyrus is always disturbing.
Right? Yeah, it's just disturbing in it's a commentary on how we have become fixated on video games.
Oh, right.
And I'm not going to talk about it here because I actually want to do a show on Black Mirror. But
right.
it is a really, really interesting episode. Anyway, Jordan Peele, horror movies. That's not all he does. He has had his hand in producing Spike Lee's Black Klansman.
Yep.
He's lending his voice to Toy Story 4 and some other stuff. So he's a pretty versatile person, moving from Key and Peele to becoming this huge success in Hollywood. So I really look forward to seeing what's to come out of him over the next few years in terms of what he's writing and producing. And I think his Monkey Paw Productions company is going to do very well. When we return, it's sequel time. We'll talk about some of the sequels that will be released in 2019 and beyond.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit research and development company whose goal is to bring a focus of respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate to the workplace. Learn more at srcinc.com/WAER.
You're listening to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee, and I'm joined by Kendall Phillips. Hollywood has a penchant for turning to the past for source material for movies today. One of the easiest ways to predict movie success is to continue the story of a previous movie. Some make sense and plenty of money. Others come up a little short and fall flat. And we're going to go through a list of some of the many sequels that are in the works. Kendall, what I noticed, though, with a lot of movies that are coming out, the original source material is 20 and 30 years old.
Yeah. We're in a real 80s nostalgia. I kind of blame Stranger Things.
So who are we going after?
Because it's us.
It's people
us.
Like, yes, it is.
And
it's
we're the ones who have the money also to produce and direct these things. And everyone says, you know, and I do think it's both for the producers and for us as audience. The last time, so I remember going to see Star Wars when it opened in the theater, because I'm old enough to remember that, as a little kid. And to this day, I've not had a movie moment as awesome as when the door blows off and the lasers are firing.
Yes.
And I was just, my jaw was
yes.
on the floor. It was
yes.
so incredible.
Even the CGI of Princess Leia. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Not last year, year before last, we saw this happening with Blade Runner, which was
yes.
one of my all-time favorite movies. And so that was remade. And now we have this thing where, like, everything is 20, 30 years old. So let's go through a list of what we think might be interesting to see again and what we think might fall flat. So first on the list is Top Gun Maverick. More than 30 years after the first one, we're back on the USS Enterprise. Not my Enterprise in Star Trek, but the Enterprise... I guess, warship for more high-flying fun. Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer will be back, and I think the story is going to focus on Maverick's son. Did you enjoy the original?
The funny thing is, I actually, for a weird set of circumstances, saw the original at a naval air station in Bermuda.
Oh, wow.
With a whole bunch of pilots who spent most of the film standing up and explaining to me why those things could not happen, like aerodynamically or legally or the policy. But I did. But of course, it was a rush. It was it was big, exciting 80s and Tom Cruise with his smile and dimples and everything. And who couldn't find that dreamy?
Yeah. You know, I think it could have some success as a summer movie. Maybe a Christmas release. I don't know. I don't know if it's the kind of thing. It's a wait for cable or wait for secondary release kind of movie for me.
You know, Tom Cruise continues to bring in big box office more overseas than here. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's not some effort to incorporate some Chinese actors or other folks just to kind of make a market over there. But I would say two things it has going for it. Well, three things. One is, of course, nostalgia. People like us go, oh, I want to see what that's like. Tom Cruise, that's another big one. But the third is we are in a kind of interesting moment in American popular culture where the military and veterans are huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would challenge anybody listening to this, watch advertisements, which I know most people fast forward through, but watch advertisements and you see veterans or military personnel showing up in car ads, in Advil ads, which, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but we are in a very focused on veteran military moment. And so maybe a film like Top Gun 2 has a chance to capture that moment.
I think so. I think where it will lose me quickly if we are just remaking the original. So
sure.
If Maverick's son is a Maverick, if it's a apple doesn't fall far from the tree kind of moment, that might get a little boring for me. Next up is Indiana Jones 28. No, it's Indiana Jones 5. And I believe Harrison Ford is going to return.
Yes.
He is no longer the spring chicken from the first movie. I don't know if he's going to be whipping around on a walker or in a wheelchair, or how is Indiana Jones going to have this high-flying energy?
A hover round, I think he's going to be.
Yeah,
Indiana
so
Jones in the hover round.
I think what we're going to get is a different Indiana Jones. Probably going to have to be a bit more cerebral.
Well, you know, they tried that.
But it's an action movie, right?
Yeah. The last, if people remember, and it's infinitely forgettable, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, was Shia LaBeouf was moving in as his son, and that seemed to be the natural, and then it didn't work out and it didn't happen. The only thing I'll say, I'm with you. I feel like after three, they should have, I felt like with the Sean Connery, that was good, story's over, Steven Spielberg, go make money somewhere else. The one thing I think this film has going for it is Harrison Ford, because I'll be honest, when I saw the sort of renewal of the Star Wars, and when Harrison Ford walked on the screen, my heart jumped.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like,
again,
they're
going after us. I mean, are we the ones spending money in the movies these days?
We're the only ones that can afford popcorn.
Okay. Pirates of the Caribbean 84.
Yes.
Or 6. There's no Jack Sparrow. Nope. That there will likely be a female pirate. And I think in this day and age, that's appropriate. I think we're trying to focus on female heroes, heroines, and I think that could be a really good one. I imagine it's going to be a really sexy pirate.
I mean, isn't that always the case with pirates? All pirates, their gender, all pirates are by definition sexy. It doesn't matter.
That's been a pretty good staple of movies.
But the only thing that's interesting, because I went and looked because I thought, well, I should.
And when I say good, I mean
financially.
Yeah, so, yeah.
For Disney's bottom line, because you know Disney's hurting for money these days. How will they go on? The last one of these, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, we've done too many, made $800 million globally, but 80% of that was overseas.
Hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if this film ends up doing well, partly because it's a Disney film, so it's likely going to do well. But I wouldn't be surprised if we don't find domestic box office maybe not that great, but they'll be banking on making their money in China, Japan, South Korea, Europe, et cetera.
I can see that. What I'm looking forward to probably most from this list is Gladiator 2. I think it's a little risky. You have an Academy Award winning movie. It's been 20 years, about 20 years since the original. There's no casting yet, but I think what makes this potentially successful is Ridley Scott is returning as the director. The story is supposed to focus on Lucius, who was the nephew of Joaquin Phoenix's Commodus character. We don't have much more than that. I don't know if Lucius is the next emperor in line to be an emperor, whether he's good or bad. But Ridley Scott is classic.
It's interesting the way he has sort of been revisiting his own canon. So, you know, he was a producer on the sort of sequel to Blade Runner. He's revisited The Alien and Prometheus and Covenant. Now he's going back to Gladiator. It's fascinating, but one quick sort of trivial note that some people might know or find interesting. There was actually a script written for a Gladiator 2 by the musician Nick Cave. He was commissioned to write it, wrote it apparently with lots of substance-fueled late nights. And the plot of that script was that the main character, Russell Crowe's character, becomes a time traveler.
Oh my God.
And goes through different wars throughout history, fighting a battle with the spirit of war or some. I mean, it's like, you know, you need a couple of edibles to make it through the script. But that, I understand that is not the script that they're planning to make.
Substance fueled is an understatement. I mean, that is an understatement. You'd have to be, you know, high on a lot of things to get that green lit. It's been 30 years since the original, but the beloved slackers Bill and Ted, Bill and Ted Face the Music, will be returning, set to film in late 2019. Returns Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter are returning from that original.
Hard to bet against Keanu Reeves. I mean, talk about a fascinating career. You know, comes sort of out of nowhere, slacker. Gets into The Matrix, becomes super action star, reduces back to being the punchline to lots of jokes. And now suddenly he's back as John Wick and super. I mean, I remember the Bill and Ted, great fun. I'm not sure that they can pull this off. My real fear for it is there's going to be sort of remake reboot fatigue by the time it comes around, but will be interesting to see.
Socrates. Hey, we know that name.
Yeah. Hey. Look him up. Oh, it's under Socrates.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I can picture John Wick coming back.
It is going to be hard to fight against
as a slut. You know, it was cute stuff in the beginning. I don't know how that is going to have success, but we will see. Beetlejuice 2 debuted back in Beetlejuice debuted back in 1987. I actually really enjoyed that movie. Really enjoyed that movie. Back when Tim Burton was on top of the game as a sort of kid-friendly, macabre material.
Yeah.
I don't know much about what's going to be in this movie, but I know it's in the works.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does. I'll be interested to see if this actually goes into production. You know, Burton, Disney put a lot of money into the Dumbo remake, the live action. It did not do that well at the box office, was not critically acclaimed. I love Tim Burton's films. I loved him when I was younger. But it does feel like sometimes filmmakers have their moment. Mm-hmm. And when that moment is over, it just doesn't quite. Now, having said that, since I'm always wrong, as my wife will tell you, inevitably this will be a $20 billion box office blowout. But love Michael Keaton, love Winona Ryder, love the chemistry of that original cast. Just can't see.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a formula that he's worked with. And I think you're right. I think that time has come and gone. It'll be interesting to see what can be done with that. But again, they're going after people like us.
Right.
And so there may be folks out there like us that, you know, really adored the original, as I did, right, and would be willing to go and give it a shot. Not sure I will.
I will probably go because I love the original so much. But what'll be interesting is, I mean, if it gets made, which I think is maybe somewhat doubtful, will it, you know, a lot of these films will probably open well, but they'll die very quickly. So Godzilla, King of the Monsters opened relatively well. It was number one at the box office. It dropped 60% and 60%, and it will be gone. The legs of a film are what tells you if it really captures the public's imagination. Do people keep going? Like a Marvel film just keeps going and going.
Here's Johnny.
One of the great psychological thrillers of all time, The Shining, is returning with a sequel called Dr. Sleep. And Stephen King wrote that a while ago, right?
Yes, yeah. And what I think will be interesting for the film, the film's got a lot going for it. The Shining is a kind of iconic film. People love it. Mike Flanagan is the director. He's the person who did The Haunting of Hill House that was such a big thing on Netflix. The interesting thing to me will be, is it going to be a sequel of the book The Shining or the movie? Because they're very, very different. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Sleep, which is Stephen King's novel, is much more about the original Shining novel, which is a lot more about psychic powers and demons and spirits. And that's sort of there in Kubrick's film, but it's never quite established. And you never quite know if these are really haunted or if people are just losing their mind.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see how Mike Flanagan tries to navigate between a book that many people love passionately and a movie that other people love passionately. How do you find the middle ground to bring all them together and feel like, yeah, that's a great
right
film?
Because if you consider someone like me, I never read the book.
Right.
So all I know, the original material for me, is what was done in the movies. I believe it's going to center on Danny, which is the son, and I believe it is really going to focus on the Shining ability.
Right, which right? is much more from the novel, and then, of course, the sequel novel was very much about that. And, of course, people probably already know this, but famously, Stephen King hated the Kubrick movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kubrick, as with Kubrick and all of Kubrick's project, he would take parts of a story, yank them out, and make something entirely different.
Yeah. I love Stanley Kubrick, though.
Yeah.
I
mean, amazing art. Amazing art.
And so that's hopefully what I'm looking forward to is if this is treated with a certain artistic expression and not sort of chasing after that horror psychological
right.
trope material, then I'll enjoy it, right? I need something a little cerebral when
right.
I go see something like this. So I want to see it from an artistic perspective and not just a movie that I need to go get
yeah.
a reaction.
Which I would say one other quick thing is, you know, we're in a kind of another renaissance of Stephen King movies. The It film and It Part 2 is coming out relatively soon. Both very smart, sort of dealt with, at least the first one dealt very much with childhood and all the kind of really powerful themes in the novel. The remake of Pet Sematary, not so much, kind mm-hmm. of relied more on shocks and scares and less on the kind of psychology of grief. So mm-hmm. I think to your point, if Mike Flanagan and the folks working on Dr. Sleep can pull those deeper elements out, then they're going to have a hit.
Okay. Next up is we head into the comedy genre with Coming to America, Eddie Murphy's classic comedy from a number of years ago. Again, we're going way back for some source material. He's back. He's likely going to play several different characters. I don't know if Arsenio Hall is going to be in this movie. The first was cute and charming. I feel like Eddie Murphy is struggling to find a big project. I don't understand sort of his slip. I mean, he's an extremely talented guy, still a great-looking dude. He still has a good presence on film. But he's not been able to turn success.
No. I mean, he had a whole series of, I would say, cheaply made, low-energy comedies, like, although I can blank on the name, but the one about Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
People look at this, they know these. It's a whole series of kind of like very lame, The Guru and things
right.
like that. Really kind of low-energy, cheap, not well-written. Tried to come back as a more serious actor. Got the Academy Award nomination for, if I'm remembering right, Dreamgirls.
Yep, yeah, he was fantastic in that.
Fantastic. And so you thought, okay, maybe he's going to do the Robin Williams and other comedians who have sort of turned that comic energy into kind of a different level. But then again, right back into obscurity.
Yeah.
And of course, he's got more money than all of us
right.
will ever have in our entire lives.
Right.
So he doesn't need it.
He can afford to sit back and be picky on scripts. So it just sounds like he's not picking good scripts, or they're not coming his way, or he's interested in something and no one's casting him. But I find Eddie Murphy to be the subject of a really cool podcast alone. Okay. You know, you could really just dive into his career. The height of success and this sort of steep drop off, and it's not because of any degradation in skills.
No, he is hilarious every time he steps.
Yeah.
But to me, the quintessential moment recently was the SNL anniversary show, where they have this big introduction to Eddie Murphy, and he comes up and says, "Oh, thank you, thanks," and that was it. And you thought, wait.
Right.
This is Eddie Murphy. Like,
dude,
there ought to be something there.
Yes.
Like, surely there's going to be something crazy and insane, and yet it's just not there. So
disinterested.
Whether he's just lost interest, but if he's doing Coming to America 2, maybe this is his desire to come back. Maybe he sees something in the culture that it's the right moment for his comic genius. I hope he can do that, because I really feel like the Eddie Murphy of the 80s could really go to town on Trump's America at the moment, but we'll see who comes to dinner.
For me, his success has been in romantic comedies. And that's what the original Coming to America
Absolutely.
Was. Movies like Boomerang. Those are the movies that I really enjoyed him in. Yeah. So I'm hoping that there is success. I don't know if I would purchase a ticket, but it certainly would be a wait for it to come on Netflix or cable or whatever.
You're very picky about your ticket buying.
You know what?
I know what I'm going to buy you for your birthday. I'm buying you a movie pass. I'm going to buy you something.
You know what? It is a thing for me where you don't have as much time anymore for that.
Yes,
and so when I step out of my house and go sit in a theater alone because my wife hates the movies, it's got to be the right movie.
Sure.
So we'll see. I'm hoping that he has some.
I want my 2.5 hours back. That's what I say.
Getting back to your genre, Night of the Living Dead 2. Now, the original goes back to 1968. We've had a crap ton of zombie television shows and movies that have been out since then. So the zombie genre has taken off. And I think there's a plateauing of it right now.
Yeah.
We see that with The Walking Dead declining in viewership. But they've chosen to bring back do a sequel to this classic movie.
Yeah, so this is John Russo, who helped write the original with George Romero. He then was no longer involved in any of this. So some people may say, a sequel to Night of the Living Dead? Wasn't there one called Dawn of the Dead? And there wasn't another one called Day of the Dead and another one called Land of the Dead? And there were those. But those were all Romero. So John Russo, who was part of writing the original Night of the Living Dead, he and Romero had a parting of ways. He actually wrote and was part of creating Return of the Living Dead, which, as a non-horror fan, you're looking at me like I'm crazy. But any horror fan listening will be saying brains, because that's a big line from that film. So Russo kind of moved that direction. And so I don't have a lot of high hopes for this movie because I kind of feel like it's probably John Russo trying to reclaim what is really, in the horror genre, one of the two or three most important films in the genre. Night of the Living Dead in 68 started the what we call the second golden age of horror. And so all those really horrible films from the 60s and 70s, Night of the Living Dead is the film that kind of jump-started that.
Yeah.
So to try to go back to that, I think you should just go find a copy of Night of the Living Dead. The other quick thing, this little trivia thing, one of the reasons you can remake Night of the Living Dead, and it's been remade a few times, is that when they distributed the film, they forgot to put a trademark on it. So the minute it was screened, it had no legal protection. It was public domain the first day it was screened.
Wow.
So it's a great film. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, they didn't make a lot of money because they more or less gave it away. So maybe this is John Russo's retirement plan. I have no idea.
I'm wondering, now that we have a new found understanding of what zombies are, if he will be borrowing from, I mean, obviously his movies have informed shows like The Walking Dead, but they've developed a framework around what a zombie is these days. And I wonder if he'll be borrowing from some of what we understand zombies to be from that and producing it with this to try to get some success or get some traction with fans.
But I think you're right. I think the moment's a little... Now, I would say there's another sequel that we're not talking about, but I just want to say Zombieland 2 is supposed to be coming out, which was the comedy from Zombieland with Woody Harrelson and others, and I have hope for that. Because
okay.
I thought I loved that movie, and I feel like that's the right blend of comedy. Night of the Living Dead 2, I feel like that is probably straight to video on demand or Netflix. I don't know that we'll ever see that in a screen.
Okay. Yeah, I'm mildly interested in seeing how this gets treated with the backdrop of The Walking Dead. Now, I said I'm not a horror genre fan. I have been a fan of The Walking Dead for a while because it's less about zombies, more about the drama and human survival and, you know, what we'll do. So I'm wondering if that kind of narrative is going to be included in that movie, or is it just about surviving, you know, zombies?
Yeah, if they can make it more about the culture and the psychology, that'll work. If it's just run from dead thing.
Right.
We've seen that, you know,
exactly.
For 40 years.
Last but not least, the highest grossing film of all time, Avatar, is going to be coming out with film 2 through 5,
yes.
Actually. So apparently James Cameron has, he had to wait for developments in new technology to do the performance capture film work that they've been doing. They wanted to do it underwater, right? So I guess the next scene or the next movie is going to take place in a world underwater. And so he had to wait for that technology, but apparently everything's been shot at the same time, and so they're going to do a sort of a slow drip of movies from 2020 on out for the next 2 to 5
movies.
Sort
of the Peter Jackson trick with Lord of the Rings, where they more or less shot all 3 Lord of the Rings at the same time with lots of reshoots, as they did with the Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. So you try and jam it all in. I mean, it's hard to bet against James Cameron because I can still remember when he said, I'm making a $100+ million film about the Titanic, and everyone said, we know the ending. Why would anybody, who would ever go see this movie?
He makes epic stuff.
I mean, or the sequel to Terminator. It's like, how can you do that again? And yet, consistently. And the other thing if people are interested, there's an earlier film of James Cameron called The Abyss that was a lot about underwater. So he's really been interested in this idea of shooting underwater.
In fact, he build a submarine, and he's done some exploring and treasure hunting and all that stuff. He does have a keen interest in underwater, seeing that as one of the sort of the last, at least last places on Earth to explore.
Sure.
And so I guess he wants to explore that in other worlds. Now, I've seen Avatar, got to be 10 or 12 times.
Right.
You know, as a sci-fi fan, the technology that it took to make that movie just blew
me
away. Story was, you know, kind of typical.
It was Dances with Wolves.
It was Dances with Wolves on another planet.
With blue people.
It was. But the visuals are what really, really got me into that movie.
It was the technology of Avatar. And so if the technology can jump that level, which it's kind of hard, because again, I've caught Avatar on, you know, TBS or whatever at 2 o'clock in the morning. And the technology now, looks, you know, it's that film doesn't look as good now.
Right.
Because
right.
we've seen Avengers and Marvel and all
that. Exactly.
Sort of
things have caught up now.
But if he can make that light year jump.
Right.
I'm curious as whether he can make that sustain over three movies. I feel like an Avatar 2 with a big jump in technology where we go, wow, you've got to see this movie.
Right.
Like the movie itself's not that interesting. You just have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
That could work. I just don't know that the story of Avatar was ever one that drew, as you said, it was Dances with Wolves.
Yeah,
we've seen that
story 100 times, but playing out in a different world with that technology. I think you make a great point. If there is some new technology that will wow us and bring people out, we might have that kind of success again. I think because of the initial success of that movie, though, people are going to buy a ticket. I'm going to buy a ticket based off of the success of the first and measure it against what it was.
So you heard it here, folks.
Yeah.
Joe Lee will buy a ticket. That may be the only film we've heard so far that he's actually going to buy a ticket to.
No. Recap. Recap is I will be going to see Dr. Sleep.
Oh, okay.
I'll play it by ear with Night of the Living Dead, depending on what I see from the trailers. Definitely going to see the Gladiator.
Oh yeah.
Sequel. That might be it there. Yeah, I think that's it.
I think you hit the high points. Yeah,
I hit the high points.
On there. Bill and Ted, I feel like I got to go see Bill and Ted.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna. I'll call you when you go
you
see
call,
it.
I will call you and let you know. Thumbs up or thumbs down. Bogus or excellent. That's what I'll just send you a text.
Kendall Phillips, I want to thank you for coming on today's show.
Always a pleasure.
This was fantastic. Look forward to talking to you again about some movies and shows that'll be coming out soon. And I want to thank you for listening to this edition of Pop Life. If you're interested in the show, please follow it, subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. Do us a favor and rate it on some of the platforms like iTunes Podcast so that we can rise a little higher in the rankings. And stay tuned for more shows coming from us here at WAER Public Media. You can also catch the 315 podcast that I host with Kevin Kloss as we explore good happenings in and around the Syracuse area. Until next time, I'm Joe Lee.